I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday afternoon. What will probably be a Trump v. Clinton matchup is the result of the totally absurd method of election used in the primaries, majority voting. Our guest is a mathematician who has spent the last dozen years studying voting systems, and he says, according to majority judgment, the front runners in the collective opinion are actually John Kasich and Bernie Sanders. Clinton and Trump are the trailers, and we're this hour going to be talking about majority judgment. An article in the Post caught our attention, and it is written by Michelle Belinsky. Trump and Clinton victorious, proof that U.S. voting system doesn't work. They may have won primaries, but are they really representative of what the American people want? In fact, as they will show, it is John Kasich and Bernie Sanders who are first in the nation's esteem. Joining us to talk about all of this, and I think our phones will go crazy on this topic. It should be a really interesting hour with lots of audience participation. Michelle Belinsky is an applied mathematician, mathematical economist, and operations research analyst. He is joining us by phone from France, just outside Geneva. He's a professor at École Polytechnique in Paris and has lived and worked in the U.S. and in France. He is the author of a number of books and articles, founding editor-in-chief of the journal Mathematical Programming, and we're delighted to have you with us this hour. Michelle, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, and it's a real pleasure to be able to talk about one's ideas. And I should say right away that this work on majority judgment is entirely a joint effort with my colleague Rita Lahaki. So that, in some sense, I'm speaking for both of us.
Okay. Well, that's a feat. Great. And I forgot to give our phone number, too. When you hear what the discussion is all about, I'm sure many of you will have response to it. And our phone number for you to join the conversation in just a little while is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Well, your research answers a major question that I've been having when I look at the unfavorable ratings of both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. They are so high, historically high, and it strikes us as unbelievable that these are the candidates we have for president when a lot of people don't like either one of them very much.
Well, I mean, that's the problem with majority vote, or actually the correct term is plurality vote, where you have a lot of candidates, and the voter can just choose one.
Mm-hmm.
But the voter says nothing about what he or she believes about the others. So you get situations where typically very extreme candidates will have very strong support of a certain strong minority, but all the rest of the people are strongly against. But they can't express themselves. They can only express themselves by voting for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But that, that means that you can, I think it's the current situation. Now, I do want to be clear about one thing.
Sure.
And that is, the order that you, the ranking among the candidates showing that Clinton and Trump were last, that depends on a poll that was taken in the period March 17 to March 27. So, obviously, things evolve. Who knows what the situation would be today? But still, at that time, Trump was piling up huge successes, and Hillary Clinton was moving ahead as well.
Well, the New York Times CBS poll, which just came out 2 days ago, shows that their favorable ratings are 32% and 31%.
Ah, okay.
So it's
very good.
It's not getting much better, actually.
No.
So majority judgment. Explain how that would work and how it might be better, Michelle.
Okay. Well, the idea is very simple, and the idea is simply that in voting, as one votes today, the voter, as I just said before, is unable to express his or her opinions in any reasonable way, because typically, for example, in our time, I would say that many voters think that all the candidates are rather limited, but they can't say it. They have no way of expressing this.
Mm-hmm.
So many of them don't go vote, because what's the point? I mean, you can't say what you feel, so you don't vote. So everything begins with the notion that voters must be given a way to fully express their opinions. Okay. Now, that means you have a lot more information about what people think. And so that one should hope, and I think one, in all the experiments we've and uses of this method in various domains, shows that this really does somehow rank competitors, because this can be applied to figure skating, where you have judges who have opinions. You can apply to wine tastings, where, you know, different judges have different opinions. And the point is to what does the jury say? So that's the first point. And the second point is that the rest becomes easy, because the rest is simply that the majority decides on the evaluation of each candidate. That is, we ask them, for example, you can use different ways of saying, of evaluating a candidate, a very good candidate, and I guess it was an excellent candidate. They use a very good candidate, an average candidate, a poor candidate, and a terrible candidate. So now each candidate has some excellence, some good, some very good, some averages, some this, some that. And then the majority decides what the candidate's majority grade is. That is, that's the assessment of the entire voting body mm-hmm. of that candidate. So we do this for each candidate. Once that is done, we also want to rank them. So somebody who's evaluated, say, good, and another is evaluated average, clearly the good is ranked above the average. But sometimes you will have, as was the case in this particular poll, there were five candidates. Four of them were judged average. Okay, so then we looked and asked, well, does this average tip towards better than average or worse than average?
Mm-hmm.
And depending on whether it tips better or worse, that determines the ultimate ranking of the candidates.
And you still do the voting in our primary system so that Democrats are, you know.
That's a good question. I mean, I think that's a separate, as far as, you know, we're theoreticians. That's a separate issue, which is an important issue. Does one want to have primaries or doesn't? But a primary is an election.
Mm-hmm.
And we say that if they're going to be primaries, then this is what should be used.
And are there any countries, I know you've studied voting systems all over the world, you talk about the fact that democracies are suffering. Is there any place where this majority judgment has become a reality?
No. It has become a reality for some other problems having to do with ranking. So, for example, you know, candidates for a position, and there are a bunch of people who evaluate them. That, it has been used for that. It's been used for awarding an international prize in journalism at the Nieman Foundation at Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been recommended for the French presidential election by one of the major Paris think tanks called Terra Nova.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think from that point of view, we need more experience so that people get confidence in the approach and see that it really works well. And I think it's a little bit pie in the sky to think that all of a sudden we're going to get a presidential election with this method. Though I'm fully convinced that this is the right thing to do.
Hmm. And what would happen if you had a whole, let's say you had five Democrats, you had five Republicans, if you chose to go the primary system, and all of the candidates were ranked below average, but one was higher below average than the rest?
Well, I mean, you know, you could do we like to say, well, this could be a peaceful revolution. The electric says none of you. So if none of you get a decent evaluation, then we don't want any of you. Nominate someone else.
You say that you think it would ask more of the voters. Don't you worry that voters just aren't coming to the polls because, A, they don't like the candidates very much, B, they're doing other things, they're too busy, C, they're watching a lot of reality television shows and not being involved in the issues of the day? What makes you think this would get more people to the polls, really?
Well, I agree that there are all these other factors, but I think this is one of the factors, and I base this on an experiment we conducted in France at a presidential election. And there, in France, you know, in the U.S., you're not allowed to do experiments and things like that next to polling booths. In France, we got the permission to do so. So, in fact, what happened was people voted officially, and when they, you know, they'd finished putting their ballots in the urns and so on and so forth, they came by our urns and our tables. We had students helping us to explain people what was going on and so forth, and they loved it. And some people, to the point that some people said, well, finally, it's really worthwhile going to vote because one can say something. So my feeling is that yes, it gives more responsibility to the voter. It asks more of him or her. You know, you have to look at all the candidates. There's something more going on. But I think that it's really worth it, because when you think take the election of 2000, and this is not a singleton in American history, where it is the presence of Ralph Nader in Florida which made Bush president. Now, that is, you know, that seems absurd. I mean, why should the decision between two major candidates depend on the presence or absence of another? But it seems quite clear that most Nader voters would have voted for Gore, so then he would have won. And now, incidentally, you can go back to the 1992 election, where it was Clinton versus Bush father with Perot. Well, suppose Perot wasn't there. Maybe Bush father would have won. And I can go back to 1912. I can go back further even, where, you know, you had Teddy Roosevelt and Taft and Wilson, and Wilson had 42% of the vote. Now, what would have happened if the Republican side had not split?
So essentially your ballot would look, tell me if it's more than this or less than this or something different. The sample I've seen is you've got these candidates and you happen to have John Kasich, Bernie Sanders, Ted Cruz, Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump. And you vote whether or not they're a great president, a good president, an average president, a poor president, a terrible president, or you've never heard of the person. Does it go beyond that? Do you have to say why?
Well, somehow six levels, right? You can take seven levels, you can take five levels, you can do different things. And that is, we found that six or seven is about the right number, because as you go higher, the voters don't use they don't use more than five or six grades. So there's no point. But that's a theoretical question in some sense.
What's interesting about this is the gentleman who ranks highest in the study you've done is John Kasich. And John Kasich really didn't do very well. He got Ohio, but he didn't do very well in a number of primaries. Isn't it rather strange that he would be the person who comes out on top?
I like the question. I mean, the whole point is that Kasich was no one's favorite, or very few people's.
Right.
But he was evaluated high, not as high as a person, as a voter's favorite candidate, but a little bit below. So you know, he was much more of a consensus candidate. And I think the majority, that's what majority, the whole concept of majority is about. We're seeking a consensus among the population. So the consensus for him was, well, he's somewhat better, though, even though he doesn't have a lot of very high grades, he has a lot of good grades, and very few bad ones. Whereas the whole, as you look at the numbers, as you said for the New York Times poll that the other day, the evaluations of Trump and Clinton that were low, they were big numbers,
mm-hmm.
much bigger than Kasich.
But wouldn't this also discount the mavericks in the system? And sometimes you really want an FDR.
Well, I think so. I mean, but I think a maverick has his chance or her chance because, you know, if he or she can persuade enough people that they have confidence and so on, then why shouldn't they give them reasonable evaluations? On the other hand, I think you do want to somehow exclude what we might call cranks, you know, extremes that are really of no interest to, and so that, that question doesn't bother me. I think that for me, majority means, yes, consensus. We're looking for a consensus. That's the entire idea. So when one comes to philosophize about the notion that, we like a system that every once in a while gives us a complete maverick, well, I think that's faulty reasoning.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's welcome phone calls from our audience. Our guest this hour is Michel Balinski. He's an applied mathematician, mathematical economist, and operations research analyst, a professor at École Polytechnique in Paris, and he's joining us by phone just outside Geneva in France today. He says that the likelihood of a Trump v. Clinton matchup here is the result of a totally absurd method of election used in the primaries, majority voting. He thinks much more of us would be more informed, more of us would vote, and we would come up with a candidate that was less on the fringe and have fewer of those candidates who are looking more for consensus candidates if we did majority judgment. And what they found here is pretty interesting, that the front runners in the collective opinion are actually John Kasich and Bernie Sanders. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are the trailers. We'll also talk about the media, which he believes gave far too much attention to the true trailers and far too little to the true leaders. How did that happen? What do you think? Does this system make sense to you? Do you see pitfalls with it? What might those be? Do you think we would become more involved? And it does answer in a way, because we've been trying to get a grasp on this unfavorability rating, which is so high for the two who are probably going to be voting for in November. It's extraordinarily high. What do you think? Do you like this idea of majority judgment? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, if you'd like to use that, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And we are on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
As you enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio today, enjoy the knowledge that, as a member, you make it possible. Your gift, combined with the gifts of your fellow members, makes up the single largest piece of our budget. We can't say it often enough. Thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio.
All right, let's welcome phone calls for Michel. 800-486-8655 is our number, and Sullivan in Green Bay is our first caller. Hi, Sullivan.
Hi.
Hi.
Just a really quick question. Could write-in votes be used to help express majority judgment?
surely, why not just add, you know, the ballot. I mean, the way we've used ballots so far is there's a line for each candidate, and there's a slot for each evaluation. So you just add the name and put in your evaluations. I mean, and put your evaluation, and everyone else can do the same. Now,
what do you
clearly,
think? I'm sorry.
If there are not many people, who are expressing themselves about this candidate, then one has to, consider that separately.
What do you think of the idea, Sullivan?
I think that the idea of majority judgment is good, but with the current voting system, write-ins or whatever could be used as like a catalyst into that. And that's what I'm wondering, if that could actually be a thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks very much for your call. Let's go to John. Hi, John.
Oh, well, hello. How are you doing today?
Good, John. How are you?
Oh, beautiful day, isn't it?
I haven't been out much, but it looks like it is, huh?
Well, get outside as soon as you're done.
Anyway. All right. Okay, no, thank you.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm not really bringing up a lot, but I am a Bernie fan, and I'm one of those guys that are thinking that Bernie is kind of getting a little bit, apologize for my language, screwed as far as the voting, the Democratic voting procedure there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see after California, and a lot of us that are Bernie fans would really like to see him as a candidate, but it seems to be that Hillary is going to be the one because of the superdelegates. Would you just want to speak about that one more time?
Michelle, you want to comment? Go ahead.
If I may address that, I mean, I think that the problem for Bernie was that he was ignored very early on by the media. Now, why was he ignored by the media? I mean, especially in comparison, there was just an enormous difference between the two. Because all the polls at the time showed Clinton well ahead. So right away, the media, poof, they go and they give attention to this. And, of course, that is an accelerating factor. So all of a sudden, that means, you know, if she gets more attention, she gets more votes and so on. And it's not a fair procedure.
Well, and you look at it, it's hard to not discount this, that Donald Trump was the one who was given full airplay on all the cable networks to all of his speeches, one after another, resulting, from what I've read, in $2 billion of free advertising.
Exactly. And it's the same phenomenon. I mean, there's the added that he's a showman and he's this, that, and the other, and he says outrageous things. But the media, you know, grabs onto this and off they go.
So you also need, if you're going to have this kind of system where you're asking more of voters, you're also going to need a system that will allow you to get more information about the candidates to the voters. If you rely on the media system we have now, they're concentrating on people who, for whatever reason, they believe will become the front runners.
I think that this would be a byproduct of using the method, because if you start using the method, then what is the goal of a candidate? The goal wants to have lots of high evaluations and very few low evaluations. So the candidate is trying to appeal to the entire population, and it is not in a position where he or she can just say, well, the hell with this minority. I don't care about it, because in any case, that won't get their votes. With majority judgment, that counts, because if they evaluate him very lowly, you know, give him very bad evaluations, then that may make a big difference.
Thanks very much, John, for your call. Jim in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Great
sure.
show, great research, 10 years of dedication. Good for you. So you're talking about system, voting system reform. I'm an advocate for it. I think obviously something's not working. I'm just wondering if you have any resources about more generalizable beyond a presidential nomination or voting, something along more complex decisions that might be like a Senate bill or you know, House of Representatives, something. I've read The Secrecy and Publicity of Voting and Debate by John Hester. Do you have any mathematical models that might work in those type situations?
Well, actually, we do, but we haven't yet written it, and we have a way of instead of saying that this will be a great president, this a good president, we can say this will be a great president with 50% probability, a good one with 35, and only an average with 15. So now, but that I think. This might be something that could be used in, you know, among, let's say, in an elected house where people are professional about all this. But I think that the notion of trying to do this in a large public would be probably too complicated. As is, it's very simple. It seems to be very natural for people to say, I think he'll be good or I think he'll be average. But I... to go beyond that, I think, would be not practical. But it's interesting theoretically, and you point to an extremely interesting problem.
Anything else, Jim?
No, I mean, I think it's very practical. I mean, even though he's a PhD, it's very practical. I mean, it's a very minor step forward, and I think it's should be very doable for us to get there. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim, very much.
May I just add one thing, then, is to say that, you know, he says PhDs have got to be complicated. Now, the whole point, the whole beauty of when you do something mathematical is to have the simplest possible result, the simplest possible method, because then there's something, well, there's something aesthetic about it. So one strives for simplicity. One doesn't always meet it, but that's another question.
And what are the chances, I don't know, because this is not in widespread use right now, what are the chances that indeed somebody who was, by consensus here, deemed to be above average president, when you're voting for that person, would indeed turn out to be above average?
Well, I mean, that's obviously, we have no notion. I mean, this is people's evaluations. Even when we vote for one person, we vote for one. Should we have done that, or should we have voted for someone else? I mean, that's nothing much we can do about that. I think all one can do is to try to let everybody express themselves as fully and as honestly as they can.
Mm-hmm. And what would be the difference between this system and just a preferential system?
Well, there's a very big difference between this and the preferential system, and you'll see right away. I mean, look, if you have a preferential system, let's take it to these five same candidates: Gingrich, Sanders, Cruz, Clinton, and Trump. Now, if it's a preferential system, then the voter is asked to list them: first, second, third, fourth, fifth. Now, you know, suppose somebody lists, I don't know, Sanders first. He may be wildly enthusiastic about Sanders. But there may be another one who lists him first simply because he thinks he's the least bad among the lot. And yet, those two expressions are going to be evaluated in exactly the same way. So, in particular, today, where there's so much skepticism concerning candidates, putting down an order seems perfectly ridiculous to me, because they cannot express the fact that they think that they are poor candidates.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's also, Michelle, a larger issue in this country that we're not getting enough people expressing interest in running for all kinds of offices, but we're talking about the presidential race, that our pickings are slim because people don't want the job anymore?
Yes. That's right. But that I mean, I know that this is happening, but that is beyond my competence.
Okay.
You know, I'm worried about. I mean, I'm just saying, if we're going to vote, here's the way to vote. And that's the notion of the contribution, to try to show people that this is the right thing to do.
And if we're going to vote, this is the way we're going to vote. Majority judgment is what Michelle Belinsky is talking about this hour. What do you think about this? Do you think more people would be drawn into the process? Would it keep us from getting candidates like Trump and Clinton, who will probably be the people we'll be voting for this November? And their unfavorable ratings are huge in this country. If indeed we were going to majority judgment, where we were judging if somebody would be a great president, a good president, an average president, poor or terrible president, we would come up with completely different candidates, as indeed was the case when people did majority judgment. Instead of majority voting, they came up with John Kasich and Bernie Sanders. What do you think? Is there a different way to do this? Does this make sense to you? We caught our attention, and we thought that you would want to weigh in on it. Here's our phone number for you to join this conversation with Michelle Belinsky, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Michelle is an applied mathematician, mathematical economist, and operations research analyst, professor at École Polytechnique in Paris, and he is the founding editor in chief of the journal Mathematical Programming. We'll take more phone calls momentarily, 800-486-8655. If you would prefer not to be on the air and you want to send a message, we can all read your message on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, or you can send us an email, talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to your phone calls. We go next to Josh in Milwaukee. Hi, Josh.
Hello.
Hi.
Question, or maybe you could just expound on it a little bit, but getting the system changed to where we're voting for people on sort of a ranking level, where would the first steps be taken? I would imagine you would have to change the way ballots are constructed at local and state levels, and so I was just wondering what sort of legislation would need to be worked through, or what would be the beginning steps to try to change the balloting election process.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure exactly how to answer your question. I don't have that knowledge to do so, but I think it would simply be a matter of usually there's a law that there is a law in each state that governs how elections are to be conducted, and then someone could simply change the law. Now, I say simply change the law. Obviously, a change in law is a big thing, especially when it concerns elected officials, and especially when it's the elected officials who they themselves are going to be changing the law. And one of the big problems in all of this kind of work is that since they've been elected by system that exists, they almost by definition like the system that exists. So it's very difficult to undergo change. However, I mean, I can tell you that in an entirely different realm of voting, which has to do with representation, in Switzerland, the laws were changed by referendum. That is, it was put before the voters. Did they want to have the status quo, or did they want to go to a new method? And it wasn't this method. It wasn't majority judgment. It's another method. But because it aimed at not electing a person, but rather at electing a parliament. So it's representing everyone somehow versus choosing one.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, that's the way it was done.
Michelle, would it make sense to start such a system on a more local level? So you had, state races going this method to see how they worked, give it sort of a trial.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it seems to me that's essential to try to see, to apply it everywhere one can, comparing it with the other methods and to understand exactly how it works. All I can say is now we've published our book in 2011, and we've done a lot of different applications since then. Some on the web. I mean, many in France, since we both live and work here. But and also it's been used, as I mentioned before, for other purposes. And it's so far, at least, I mean, it's given entire satisfaction. There's never been any challenge.
John sends us this email. The current voting procedure in this country is a form of madness. 8 months before a president is to leave office, the country is exposed to months of campaign madness that will repeat itself 2.5 years later. Important news is brushed aside for sound bites by moronic candidates, and no one can explain this election procedure that is unlike any in the developed world. This method guarantees that we get the worst possible candidates.
Well, I tend to agree in the sense that I've thought that the having primaries in all these separate states, when you start out with 10 or 12 candidates, and then somehow somebody, you know, is in the lead somewhere with, I don't know, 34% of the vote, and somehow he's the big winner or she's the big winner, and bang, oh, they get money, this, mm-hmm. that, and the other happen. And it's almost a game of Russian roulette. I mean, perhaps, you know, among the Republicans, I mean, we'll already see that at least from the opinions in the end of March, Kasich was ahead of the Trump and Cruz. But maybe the candidate that was really preferred by the Republicans was eliminated well before.
Let's go next to, thanks, Josh, for your call, Marty in northern Wisconsin. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good afternoon. This poll that just came out in the last few days, I thought it said that 63% of people polled thought Hillary Clinton was the most qualified to be president. So her 32%, we don't want her to be president, it doesn't make any sense. And I'm not suggesting that the electorate always makes sense, but... Personally, I'm all for reforming our electoral system, but let's start with the Electoral College. That is, it's pathetic. We do not have a Democratic vote in this country for president. If you live in Wyoming, your vote does not count as much as if you live in Ohio.
Hello?
Yeah. Marty, okay, are you okay?
Yeah, yep, I'm okay. I pulled off and people
thank
are
you,
driving
Marty.
By.
All right, I was worried there for a minute. All I was hearing was a car. Michelle.
Yes, no, well, I entirely agree with you. I think it's a crazy system, but the problem is it does favor one party, and it's going to and being in the Constitution, it's you're going to have a hell of a time changing it.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think that the you know, at least if we could change the system that is used to for the elections, and then already at least that would help, it seems to me, the present situation. But it's one of those situations where very difficult to change.
Thanks, Marty, very much for your call. Do we need more information if we're voting great president, good president, average president, poor president, terrible president? Do we need to fill in those categories some? What is it would make a great president? Would we be educated about that? How do we even answer that?
Yes, I mean, we've thought about that a lot. And the problem is that, I mean, we live in a democracy, so which is not a problem. It's a great thing. But from this point of view, we live in a democracy. That therefore, it is not for the system to say, well, judge the candidate for his honesty, for his for her ability in foreign policy, for her knowledge of economics, for et cetera, et cetera. Some people will think that some things are much more important than others, and therefore, they are the ones who, in some sense, should be trying to, I use the word, integrate all of these perhaps conflicting, you know, maybe here's a candidate who is extremely presentable, but maybe a bit weak on foreign policy, and so on. So they have to put it together. And, I mean, that is, it seems to me, is the only democratic way. Now, this contrasts with, for example, ranking wines instead of candidates, because in the wine tasting, there's a great deal of agreement over what is important, having to do with odor, having to do with aspect, having to do with how long it stays in the mouth, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So there you can start you asking judges to say something about each of these things. And there is a way of using majority judgment for that.
We're welcoming phone calls. If you'd like to join the conversation, would you agree with our guest, who has spent the last dozen years studying voting systems, he's a mathematician, that majority voting that has given us probably Trump v. Clinton in the general election is a totally absurd method of election, and it gives us candidates who really are not the candidates that we like and what we really want? Indeed, their studies of this have shown that it's John Kasich and Bernie Sanders who are first in the nation's esteem, and Trump and Clinton come in last. Throw in the media giving a whole lot of attention to trailers and far too little attention to those who are held higher in the nation's esteem. Perhaps we should take a serious look at a different kind of system, majority judgment, instead of majority voting. And he's explained what that system is. What do you think about this? Is it an alternative? Would it keep us from getting those people who we don't like very much as our candidates? Is there a better way to go here? Would it draw more people into the voting process? What do you think? Our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Michel Belinsky is our guest, and he is joining us by phone today from France. He's an applied mathematician, economist, operations research analyst, and professor at École Polytechnique in Paris. You, in this article that we read, also talk about voting being the subject of intense mathematical research since 1950. What research is important? What research should we pay careful attention to, Michel?
Well, first of all, it's quite interesting that, in fact, research and thinking about voting goes back to Ramon Llull in 1299, and then afterwards there's a man by the name of Nicolas Cusanus in 1433 who both proposed methods which have reemerged lately. The subject somehow gets taken up, and then it's sort of forgotten and gets taken up again. In 1950, approximately, Kenneth Arrow, the Nobel-winning economist, he won his part of the reason he got the Nobel Prize is that he showed that if you were to use preferential voting, that is, if the voters were to list candidates in the order of their preference, then in some basic sense you can't find any decent method.
Hmm.
So this has triggered all kinds of work of people trying to find a way around this. And the thing that we have found Rita Lachaki and I have been quite surprised, and then as we got into this, all of a sudden we started looking, and we thought that it's crazy to keep on looking at the methods that rely on the idea of giving preferences.
Mm-hmm.
We better do something else. And when you do something else, as we have suggested, then you get out of those difficulties. You get out of, for example, this difficulty that the candidacy of Nader changes the nature of the decision for the United States in Florida.
Let's go to Nate in Friendship next. Hi, Nate.
Hello, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Just fine, thank you.
Good.
And I have a question for your guest.
Okay.
What is your essential opinion of the voters as they research their candidate, the various candidates, and narrow their choices down? How do you perceive that as a responsibility level by the voter?
Well, I perceive it as a very high responsibility level, but I think that the difficulty of, you know, I mean, I think it is very difficult precisely to say if you have a bunch of candidates who, you know, some of them are very good in one dimension for you, others are, you know, others are, and they're less good in another, and you're trying to make up your mind about all this. And then you're also asking yourself, am I going to waste my vote by giving a vote to somebody who hasn't the slightest possible chance? So then you're pushed into trying to somehow strategize and manipulate your vote. And this is one of the things, this is why we're very much for the system, because this is one control, that this is a system that is most resistant to that. That is somehow honestly.
And one needs to look at the candidate and see who has the best overall probability. There are no perfect people. You know, we're not electing anybody expecting perfection in all aspects of their.
I agree with you entirely. That's why I think that. But I also think that you, the voter, when you look at these five candidates that we've been talking about, you're going to have opinions that you can summarize. I mean, it's not a complete opinion. Obviously, you're going to say you could say you expect this to be a great president, but that doesn't mean he or she is great on everything.
Right. It's
some overall evaluation.
And but I think don't you agree that that should be left up to the individual voter?
Absolutely.
I really think we as a country are intelligent enough to make up our own mind, not have to have a consensus vote or not even a vote hardly. It sounds almost as though the right to vote is being you're suggesting that maybe people aren't quite up to the task.
Oh no, I think he's saying the opposite, that people are up to the task and this will make them be more interested in completing their informed task.
It seems to me that it's clear to me that asking them to evaluate candidates, it's much, much more informative because you get all the comparisons. And in particular, I mean, you know, you take Kasich in this case, it shows that as the voters in this poll express themselves, they evaluated him relatively well and certainly not low. They didn't give as many low votes as they gave to Trump and Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And Cruz,
yeah, we forgot Cruz. He didn't do well. Thanks very much for your call, Nate. Thanks, everybody else. We had some Facebook comments we couldn't get to as well. So, and if you didn't get a chance to weigh in on this idea, we would like very much to hear your thoughts about majority judgment. Michelle, thank you very much for the hour.
Sure. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this opportunity to try to explain this.
Thanks. We appreciate your being with us. Michelle Belinsky, the article that caught our attention, Trump and Clinton victorious, proof that U.S. voting system doesn't work. They may have won the primaries, but are they really representative of what the American people want? In fact, as we face, as we will show, and he made clear during the course of this hour, it is John Kasich and Bernie Sanders who are first in the nation's esteem. Trump and Clinton come last. Michelle, our guest this hour, joining us by phone from outside Geneva. He's an applied mathematician, mathematical economist, and operations research analyst professor at École Polytechnique in Paris. And we thank very much Scotty Myers for producing this hour, KP Whaley for on-air production in the very warm, still sunny downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up. And then we'll talk about energy crisis of the 70s.